One of the ways I know that I'm getting older is that I am more persnickety about things. For those of you who are not familiar with this particular affliction, to be persnickety is to place too much emphasis on trivial or minor details. In reality, gray hairs or not, I have always been a little bit fussy about following the rules. This curmudgeon side of me has firm ideas about many things, including what should or shouldn't happen on Sunday. When I was growing up, that's always a great way to begin a sentence. You know, good stuff's coming after that. When I was growing up, we didn't do any com rest on the Lord's Day, though it was permitted to go out to eat after church for some reason. We also didn't participate in birthday parties, sports, or other social activities. I think this mostly was because who had time with church both in the morning and in the evening? As we now, as a family, get regularly invited to kids' birthday parties and school events that are scheduled on the Sunday, I find myself frequently affronted by this change. Even the Christian Women's Home Planner I use, which has both a daily Bible verse and a schedule for you to tell you when to vacuum out your dryer vent, tells me that Sunday is the day that I'm supposed to clean out my purse and go to the grocery store. I grumble and am surprised by my visceral judgmentalness on this issue. Unconscious, unspoken cultural practices learned in childhood seem to be particularly intense. I would have been pretty comfortable among the Pharisees in today's two stories about Jesus and the Sabbath. Jews in first century Palestine had religious and cultural practices of a day of rest on Saturday. This day, free of work, was baked into the very nature of the universe. It is a divine practice. In Genesis, we are told God made the world and everything in it in 6 days, and on the seventh day, he rested. And so he commanded humanity to do the same. And then, when the Israelites were rescued out of slavery in Egypt, part of their practice of freedom was a day free from work. And as we read in Deuteronomy today, this rest extended to everyone. Master and servant, slave and free, men and women, children and animals, Israelites and the foreigner. Over the following hundreds of years, Jewish people tried to figure out what it really meant to have a day of rest. As a result, a complex and extensive set of rules developed around what it was and was not permitted on the Sabbath. Like my family, who would not shop on Sunday but had no problem going out to eat, the Jews worked to figure out what it meant to rest as God commanded in their particular context. Some of it made logical sense and some of it seemed arbitrary, but it was something that everyone participated in. Everything halted for that one day. The Sabbath allowed people a day to refresh themselves and to focus on worshiping God, but it also set the Israelites apart from their non-Israelite neighbors, or often their foreign conquerors. Like circumcision, the Sabbath became a major defining characteristic of what it meant to be a Jew. You kept the Sabbath, no work, time to worship. Don't be like the heathens around you. It was in this context that our stories today in Mark take place. In the first, Jesus and his disciples are walking around on a Saturday, and his disciples get a bit peckish. They reach out and harvest some grain as they walk by. The Pharisees, the dominant religious group in first century Judaism, and the self-appointed keepers of all things as they should be, give Jesus a hard time. They have a gotcha moment with this upstart religious leader and his impious followers. However, Jesus rejects their criticism and takes the opportunity to critique their priorities. First, he draws on their shared religious story, reminding them that the great Israelite King David broke the rules for a larger purpose. The tale he references comes from 1 Samuel chapter 21. This is before David was king. The current king of Israel, Saul, is jealous of David's popularity and his growing power. He tries to kill David, and so David flees. As he's running for his life, he comes to the tabernacle and asks the priest for food. The priest has no regular food, but offers David the consecrated bread, which is offered to God on the altar weekly. The bread is supposed to only be eaten by the priests in the tabernacle, but David and his men are allowed to consume it. The energy it gives them allows them to continue to flee, and their lives are saved. Having given this history lesson, Jesus explains to the Pharisees that the Sabbath was made for mankind and not mankind for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. In other words, get your priorities straight, people. This day of rest is about what it is doing for people. People shouldn't be hungry in the service of an ideal. Plus, Jesus adds, I'm the one who made this practice, and I'm in charge of the rules. As you can imagine, this was not received well. Jesus continues stirring the pot in the story that Mark places next in his gospel. This time, Jesus is in the synagogue and there is a man with a withered hand. The crowd is paying attention because at this point, Jesus has a reputation for doing work through healing on the Sabbath. Everyone is looking for a fight. Knowing what was up, Jesus asks them to consider, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to kill? The answer seems obvious, to do good and save life. And the Pharisees in the larger Jewish tradition actually clearly agree with Jesus. There were all sorts of circumstances in which the rules of the Sabbath could be set aside to preserve life. Jesus asks them to consider, which is more aligned with the spirit of the Sabbath, to allow people to continue to suffer or to bring them healing and new life? What is the point of the Sabbath? To be clear, Jesus is not dismantling or casting aside the practice of Sabbath. He's pushing instead his listeners to give it its proper place. As Jesus explains in Matthew 15:17, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish, but to fulfill. Jesus might be rocking the boat, but he's not trying to sink it. When reading accounts like this, it is easy to other and belittle first century Judaism and the Pharisees. They obviously were ridiculous, and good thing we modern Christians know better, is often the unspoken narrative. This may be easier for those of you who aren't really judgmental about what other people do with their time on Sundays, but I can get there too, so. The tendency is to take something that is good and God-given, like the Sabbath, and codify it, box it in, and then lose the point. We do it as human beings all the time. There is something compelling about thinking if we just follow the right explicit rules, we will be good people, acceptable to God. If we cross everything off the checklist, others will think well of us and we will be respected. We will earn favor of God and human beings. While Protestant Christianity might propose that we are saved by faith alone, we do seem to think that we need to prove it. And anyone else who's not doing the same, we think stands condemned, or at least silently judged from afar. Because of my own personal Sabbath hangups, it's easy to write myself in today's story as one of the Pharisees. This is probably the direction the danger lies for most of us today. We, as Quakers, have chosen an obscure sect of Christianity with distinct practices and convictions. It is very easy for us to get caught up in trying to follow the rules and be the most Quaker. We like the feeling of being correct, self-righteous, and part of a special club. When our priorities get off balance, the benchmark for everything becomes, is this the Quaker thing to do? Instead of, where is the Spirit of God leading us? This is true both in our life together as a community. What will our worship look like? How will we conduct our business? What kind of ministries will we prioritize? And it is true in our lives as individuals. What kind of work will I pursue? What kind of aesthetic will I cultivate? Where do I spend my free time? In our desire for purity, the Quaker way can become an unbending law. Just as there is value in the practice of a community Sabbath, there are values in our traditions. Quaker practice is part of what brought us together. I grew up in this corner of the Christian world and have chosen it again and again as an adult because I see its truth. But the question today is, was Quakerism made for humanity or humanity made for Quakerism? Our particular practices are supposed to grow out of our experience of God and be tools to continue to help us connect with the divine. Anytime they become a dead letter, we've lost the point. The Quaker movement developed because people in a particular time and place had an experience of the Spirit of God leading and directing them. As Paul Anderson wrote in his essay, Primitive Christianity Revived, the Original Quaker Vision, the first Quakers believed a new dispensation of divine grace and transforming power had been poured out on them, and that this gift is available for all who would be open to it. Christ is here to teach his people himself, without need of human intermediaries or cultic rites. Anderson challenges us with the observation that, for us, the best way to emulate the revival of primitive Christianity in the lives of early friends might not be to copy their contributions as traditions, a second order venture. Rather, the most Quaker way to proceed might involve seeking, with early friends, to experience the source of spiritual vitality that the apostles and early friends themselves experienced, a first order spiritual encounter and a lived experience. In other words, Jesus is Lord even of Quakerism. If a legalistic form of Quakerism is not your particular temptation, there are lots of other forms of legalism to choose from. There are so many boxes we can try to contain God inside of. So many systems in which we can put the law before the Spirit. Like the Sabbath and like Quakerism, these things are not bad, but they can become idols. We begin to see them as an end in and of themselves, rather than a practice or a tool. Jesus didn't tell his disciples or the man with the withered hand to forget the Sabbath, but rather to understand its purpose, to give life and to heal. Maybe in reading the story today, you don't identify with the Pharisees. Instead, you identify more with the hungry disciples or the man with the withered hand. Maybe you have a deep need, physical or spiritual. You're trying to do it right, to get it right, to figure it out. But every direction you turn, you've got somebody telling you that you're doing it wrong. You're trying to feed yourself, but people are telling you to stay hungry. You're in need of healing, but people are telling you to wait for another day. All too often, these gatekeepers and rule followers are religious folks. It's amazing how figuring out just a little bit about the meaning of life can make you quite bossy of other people. If this is you today, I'm sorry. I've been that do-gooder who has completely missed the point. That person who told you to wait in your pain until a more convenient moment. Someone who said that God could not be working that way in your life because God doesn't do that. The friend who was more concerned with being right than being kind. But even when people don't care and don't get it, God does. Jesus is in the business of feeding and healing. He has come to fulfill the law, showing us the ways in which our needs for sustenance and transformation are not in conflict with our need for rest. All these things are under his dominion. Today's story is full of good news for everyone. For those of us who are waiting for God's intervention, and for those of us who are struggling with disordered priorities, the Sabbath was made for us. That rest we each need is here, built into the system. We don't have to police the boundaries of how God works. God can handle that. He is Lord of the Sabbath. Also, our God is not a God who asks us to wait in our hunger and our pain, but meets us where we are. We are all invited to experience healing and fullness. It is the gift of the Spirit, this kind of relaxing. Letting go so that God can work. Opening up to the reality of being loved by a God who gives us what we need.